I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday. Yesterday, the Senate delegation from Baltimore City voted 3-2 in favor of a proposal by Johns Hopkins University to establish its own private police force on the three campuses Hopkins occupies in Charles Village, Mount Vernon, and East Baltimore. Next week, Michael Harrison is expected to be confirmed by the Baltimore City Council as the new police commissioner. He and a number of other political leaders favor the Hopkins proposal. Some at the university and on the medical campus have voiced strong concerns about a privatized force's accountability. Is a Hopkins private police force part of the answer to Baltimore's crime problem? We'll talk about it today on Midday. Plus, the acclaimed flamenco guitar virtuoso Grisha Goryachev performs live in Studio A. First, the news. Good afternoon and welcome. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. And thanks to everybody who made a pledge in our spring membership campaign this week. We very, very much appreciate your interest and your support. It means the world to us. Next week, Michael Harrison's appointment as the permanent police chief in Baltimore City is expected to be approved by the city council. That'll probably happen on Monday. Mr. Harrison will be my guest on Midday on March 19th. Today, another conversation about policing in our city. Yesterday, the Baltimore City Senate delegation to the Maryland General Assembly voted to approve legislation that will allow Johns Hopkins University to establish its own private police force. The Senate Judicial Proceedings Committee is expected to vote the bill out of committee later today. The House City delegation was scheduled to vote this morning, but it appears that they have postponed that vote until Tuesday. If this legislation is ultimately approved, Johns Hopkins will be the first private university in Baltimore to have its own police force, although several state schools like Morgan State, Coppin State, and the University of Baltimore have police departments which operate under written agreements with Baltimore City. About a year ago, lawmakers rejected Hopkins' efforts to create a campus police force, saying that the university hadn't consulted with the communities in which the new force would operate and that the legislation needed further review. In the months that followed, Hopkins held discussion forums and panels and met with community associations and students. A group called Students Against Private Police has organized protests, according to a survey of about 1,800 students by the Hopkins Student Government Association. 75% oppose the proposal. More than 100 faculty members have written a letter opposing the university's efforts as well. Several community associations in the neighborhoods surrounding the university's Homewood campus have also voiced their opposition, while others have voiced support. The proposal has some high-profile advocates as well, including Hopkins alum and former New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg, Maryland State Senate President Mike Miller, U.S. Representative Elijah Cummings, and Baltimore Mayor Catherine Pugh. So what would a Hopkins police force mean for Baltimore? Would it deepen a divide between the university and the community, or will it bring Hopkins closer to its neighbors in Charles Village, Mount Vernon, and East Baltimore? My guests today are Dr. Lester Spence. He's an associate professor of political science and Africana studies at Johns Hopkins. Dr. Spence, always a pleasure.
Oh, it's good to see you.
Rihanna Matthews-Brown is the director of university initiatives at Johns Hopkins. Ms. Matthews-Brown, welcome.
Thank you.
And Antero Piatella is a former Baltimore Sun reporter and the author of The Ghosts of Johns Hopkins, The Life and Legacy That Shaped an American City. Antero, welcome.
Thank you.
We had planned to speak with the investigative reporter Stephen Janis today, but we decided to speak with Stephen at a later date instead. We are streaming our conversation here in Studio A on the WIPR Facebook page, and a little bit later we'll take your calls and emails. So Rihanna Matthews-Brown, what is Hopkins proposing?
So Hopkins is proposing legislation that would authorize us to establish a university police department. And so kind of the way the bill is laid out, it would authorize us to have a police department on our, you know, serve our campus area, and then would provide for a process for us to have boundaries that may include communities adjacent to our campus. And that process is really well spelled out in the bill. Also, with some of the amendments that were adopted in delegation yesterday, it would require community input and approval, would require an MOU with the Baltimore Police Department, and also would require the city council then to pass a resolution saying that we met the requirements of the bill.
How big a force are we talking about?
You know, we're talking about no more than 100 people total.
And this is divided between all three campuses.
All three campuses.
Homewood, Peabody, Mount Vernon, and East Baltimore, where the medical center is.
Exactly. So when you're talking about between those three campuses, 100 people max, at any given time, that's probably, 10 to 12 individuals between those three campuses.
There are currently some armed police officers employed by Hopkins, but they don't constitute a specific force. How does the number 100 compare to the number that you're currently employing? I understand these people are off-duty Baltimore police officers or Maryland State police officers. Is that correct?
Exactly. And so the idea behind this is to be able to substitute, where we now are currently relying on off-duty BPD or sheriff deputies to no longer have to rely on them and to be able to hire our own university police officers. And it has a number of benefits. One is that we could then be keyed into BPD's CAD system for dispatching officers. We could establish...
What's CAD? What's that mean?
Oh, goodness. Now I can't remember what it stands for. But it's their dispatch system, mm-hmm. so that we can respond to 911 calls the way that other university police departments do. It would also allow us to establish a body-worn camera program so that we could... And the bill would require us to do so that we could require our officers to wear body-worn cameras and record interactions with the public. So it's another layer of accountability.
And Lester Spence, you're one of the faculty members who signed the letter in opposition to this proposal. How come?
Broadly, the factoid, every time I'm on a show or I talk about Baltimore, I think that I talk about one factoid, that Baltimore City spends $500 million on police, more than $500 million. Where it spent $145 million in 1990. It spent $35 million on Parks and Rec in 1990. It spends about $35 million now, right? But here's the thing. That number doesn't actually count the amount of money we spend in Baltimore City Schools policing. It doesn't take into account Morgan State's police office. It doesn't take into account Coppins. It doesn't take into account University of Baltimore. It doesn't take into account actually a number of hospitals in the area actually also have their own private police forces. What we've got is actually a policing problem where we're taking a range of social issues and we're solving them using police. It tends to exacerbate insecurity. It exacerbates inequality. So that's kind of the broad argument, right? The more specific argument is that to the extent that folks are suggesting that adding another police unit will actually reduce crime, there's not really a lot of literature that suggests that, broadly considered. The crimes that students at Hopkins are most likely to either participate in or be the victims of are crimes that the force doesn't really wrestle with. And then if you think about just the fact that we've got a private police unit potentially policing spaces outside of Hopkins campus, it's very difficult, if not impossible, to generate modes of accountability for those individuals. So, for example, I'm at Homewood. If a police officer at Hopkins has a negative encounter with somebody in the Greenmount area, for example, how's that Greenmount resident gonna be able to hold the Hopkins police officer accountable?
And Greenmount, for folks who don't know the area, is 12 blocks away from the Homewood campus.
Yeah, yeah. Again, we just think that police power is a public power that should only under limited circumstances be given to private institutions.
And Antero Pietella, you wrote a op-ed for the Baltimore Brew basically advocating for this proposal. You seem to sort of reluctantly support it. But of course, you've written about Baltimore housing in a very famous book, Not in My Neighborhood, and your latest book, The Ghost of Johns Hopkins, talks about the very long history and troubled history between the institution and the community. So this is all happening in the context of that, isn't it?
Johns Hopkins has always been a lightning rod. From the very beginning, when Johns Hopkins, the founder, announced that he would have a hospital totally new nature in the sense that at the point when Johns Hopkins announced the hospital, there were no hospitals in Baltimore that served black neighborhoods. And so Johns Hopkins wanted to serve the black neighborhoods and also women, regardless
whether it was a racial element.
Well, I mean, yes, I mean, yeah. what this did in 1870 was that the neighborhood, which in those days was white neighborhood, they protested the hospital and wanted to stop it.
And even in the 1970s, you write that the hospital considered moving out of the neighborhood, right?
Yes, indeed. And in some ways, we are in a similar situation where Hopkins has to be able to project a safe and welcoming neighborhood. And so at the present time, we have a situation where, yes, there have been city police and sheriff's police aiding in hospital, but at the same time,
because there has been a spike in crime in Rihanna, there's definitely been a spike in crime in East Baltimore, as well as a spike in crime by Hopkins figures, over the last 3 years in the area. But the issue of accountability is something that is of deep concern to a lot of people, because Johns Hopkins and the president of Johns Hopkins reports to the board of directors of Johns Hopkins. He doesn't report to the citizens of Baltimore. So what about Lester Spence's concern that, the area, the geographic area that the police would be operating in, and their accountability is not to the public at large, although they would have public powers. How does that? Right. How do you reconcile that?
I mean, I think Dr. Spence raises a really important point, I think a view that we heard consistently throughout our public engagement process, which is that policing is an inherent, it's a public good, it's a public function, and we need to make sure that this university police department is accountable to the public. I think that when you look at the bill, and certainly with the amendments that were adopted yesterday, that's what you see. So, there is an MOU with the Baltimore Police Department. The police department has to agree to the boundaries that kind of go beyond our campus area. If at any time the police department says that we are not kind of meeting the requirements of the MOU or the bill, they could revoke that MOU. Likewise, there is significant legislative oversight. We have to have a high level of annual reporting that goes to the legislature, the public, the mayor, the city council. The authority to establish this police department rests in this legislation. At any point, the General Assembly says that we have, not complied with the requirements, they can then pass a law and remove that authority. And there are a number of different accountability measures that really exceed what you see in any other police department here in the state.
And Lester Spence, a lot of folks say, given the proximity to the Baltimore Police Department, which is under a consent decree with the Justice Department, which is the subject of a scathing report that came out a couple of years ago by the Justice Department, chronicling, multiple decades-long unconstitutional policing, that the distrust and the lack of confidence in the efficacy and the fairness and the constitutional behavior of any police force is, in a way, those of you who oppose the Hopkins police force are sort of visiting the sins of the BPD on this yet to be formed entity at Hopkins.
We're it's like we're between a rock and a hard place, right? First, I think it's important to take what you just said and reflect that back upon the idea that one of the institutions that's going to basically hold the Hopkins Police Force accountable will in fact be the Baltimore Police Department, right? And just think about that for a second, right? The Baltimore Police Department is arguably one of the most corrupt police departments in the country. The level of accountability it has to Baltimore citizens is really weak, although that's changing as a partial result of the Justice Department ruling, as a partial result of, I think, Maryland state legislation. But the solution, given that, isn't necessarily to create a new police force, right? And I think here, and I appreciate this conversation, here is where a lot more time and care, I think, could have and should have been taken in order to figure out whether they're given BPD, given concerns about BPD, but also given concerns expressed about the Johns Hopkins police force, right? I mean, so think about that. The only community association I'm familiar with that actually supported this was Charles Village. I think Charles Village supported.
And the Canterbury Tuscany.
Yeah.
And then Abel and Remington, two very adjacent neighborhoods, oppose it. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So you've got that split. Most of the students are against it. A significant number of faculty is against it, right? So it'd be one thing if we had general, broad spread support for the idea that that a Hopkins police force is the solution to the crime problem. Right, but we don't have that type of broad spread that type of broad support, right? So it seems to me that I understand the move to say, well, you know what, we've got this corrupt police force, we need something to better handle it. It just doesn't seem to me that this looks like the solution to that.
Lester Spence is an associate professor of political science and Africana studies at Johns Hopkins University. Antero Pietilla is the author of The Ghosts of Johns Hopkins, The Life and Legacy That Shaped an American City. Rihanna Matthews Brown is the director of university initiatives at Hopkins. We'll have more on the Hopkins police, private police proposal that is winding its way through the legislative process in Annapolis when we come back from a break. I'm Tom Hall. It's Midday. Stay with us.
This is your public radio, 88.1 WYPR.
Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up on our show Monday, the future of public education in Maryland. This week, Britt Kerwin, the former chancellor of the University of Maryland system, announced that more than 60% of Maryland's high school seniors can't read at a 10th grade level or pass an Algebra 1 test. Kerwin is leading a commission to determine the best ways to improve Maryland public schools. Democratic lawmakers are pushing to implement some of the commission's recommendations, but Republicans are resisting the idea of raising taxes to fund the programs. Dr. Britt Kerwin joins me for the hour here on Midday Monday. And later today, the flamenco guitarist Grisha Goryachev will join us. He'll be here in the studio for a live performance. But now more about the proposal by Johns Hopkins University to establish its own police force. My guests are Rihanna Matthews Brown, the director of university initiatives at Johns Hopkins, Lester Spence, who's a professor of political science and Africana studies at Hopkins, and the journalist and author Antero Pietilla. Our phone number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWYPR. We are streaming on the WYPR Facebook page. We do have a number of calls. Not sure how many we're going to be able to get to, but I do appreciate everybody who is lining up to join the conversation. Antero Pietilla, for example, there's a big project that Hopkins undertook a few years ago in East Baltimore called the EBDI, the East Baltimore Development Initiative. That has been frustrating to a lot of people. One of the reasons being the pace of it has been so slow, and that has, I guess, served to really further exacerbate the relationship between Hopkins and the East Baltimore community.
We have a couple of factors here. We have a policing problem, and then we have a deep mistrust problem. And lots of people, regardless of what Hopkins aims to do or wants to do, lots of people will be automatically against it because it is Hopkins. And so, but one of the reasons why I reluctantly support the police department for Hopkins is this, that the present system is unworkable, has proven to be unworkable in the sense that Hopkins is unable to control the outside contractors, policemen and sheriffs who are working for Hopkins. In many cases, police officers, I'm told, may start a shift, but then they will say that they have to be in court tomorrow. And so there is no predictability. And of course, Hopkins would want to have predictability so that it will actually be able to protect the areas that it wants to protect.
And Rihanna Matthews-Brown, why is there confidence on the part of Hopkins that you would be able to attract and recruit and train police officers who would act in a constitutional way, who would be essentially better than what we're used to with many of the officers currently on the Baltimore City Police Department? I mean, the BPD is having a very difficult time attracting recruits. The standards that you've proposed in the bill for training match those of the Maryland State Police. Those are, as I understand it, the same standards that the BPD operates under. Why is it that we should think that Hopkins is going to be able to find better police officers, or even, you know, the same kind of police officers, if the BPD itself can't fill out its force?
Right. You know, I think, you know, one thing I would add also is that in addition to those state requirements, there are additional requirements in the bill, and, you know, that our police officers would have to meet. They're going to be training requirements around, racial profiling, around implicit bias. And so, I would say that I think that we have the opportunity to build from the ground up a model police department that we can hopefully can be modeled kind of around the state and around the country. You know.
Yeah. And Lester Spence, Davon Love, who's a young man I'm sure you know, he's a part of Leaders for a Beautiful Struggle, an activist in the African-American community for a number of years here. He's talked about completely dismantling the BPD. I mean, just firing everybody and starting from scratch. Mm-hmm. Would this Hopkins Police Force be an opportunity to do that, to build from scratch, from ground zero, with nobody on the books so far, start and build an ideal police department?
No. Okay. So this is one way to imagine that, right? So Hopkins creates this police force, and it's so dope. I'm sorry. So wonderful that then the Baltimore Police Department looks at Hopkins and says, okay, wow, we can do it that way. Right. That so you can imagine that. The thing is you're imagining it. Right. There are no models of that type of public private to public interface happening as it relates to the police. What we're talking about here is basically a dynamic where if we create another private police force that gives better incentives, better benefits, maybe better salary, then they'll likely peel from the applicants who are applying to be BPD officers, right? Particularly if I believe one of the amendments that Corey McRae proposed was that 25% of the residents, 25% of the police officers actually be from Baltimore, right? So you're actually talking about peeling from BPD as opposed to actually creating as opposed to actually extending outward. Right. And I want to go back to that accountability thing. Right. Because one of the dynamics so there are better trained police officers. But from what the literature we know, the challenge with police in general and BPD specifically is not a matter of them being poorly trained. It's the structural issue. Right. So if you've got, for example, Hopkins police officers, if they're actually still liable to they're still protected under the Law Enforcement Officers Bill of Rights. Right. If there are no accountability mechanisms directly for Baltimore residents, as opposed to some other political entity, then it's not clear. Then we're only a couple of steps away from having a challenge.
So in Hopkins. I don't know much about literature, but I do know, according to what I've read, that there are many. I mean, there are every other state university has its own police force. You mentioned there are hospitals that have its own police force, and there are many private institutions around the country who feel the need, who have them, and they seem to be working. Okay. I mean,
no.
Or is there, in fact, literature that says they're a terrible idea and they're screwing up left and right?
Well, University of Chicago has their own police force. I was actually there participating. A colleague of mine died. And either the week before I was there or when I was there, University of Chicago shot someone. I believe that person was unarmed. There are a number of private institutions who have police who've had similarly problematic behavior. Maybe you can train that out, but again, the reason I talk about the literature is because I do have a dog in this fight, but I'm also a scholar and I kind of study this for a living. So it's important to kind of articulate what the literature says. I mean, Hopkins' motto, 1885, the truth will set you free, is about kind of speaking the truth.
Antero Pietella, the bill didn't fare at all. It failed last year because Hopkins was criticized for not reaching out to the community, for not involving the community in this decision. You have a very long view of Johns Hopkins. You wrote a wonderful biography of the guy who founded it. What do you think, in your view, Johns Hopkins could do to garner the support and the confidence of the communities?
Well, it's not enough. We saw it last year that any kind of consultative process is seen as by opponents as being too little and too late. It is a broken relationship, and as we have in personal relationships, it's very difficult to repair these kinds of broken relationship, and so it is in this question as well. And so it's what has happened in the interim, of course, was that all kinds of sweeteners were added in Annapolis. And indeed, Hopkins, if it gets the police department, it gets lots of sweeteners that it does not pay for, but the state pays for, a cadet program for aspiring law enforcement officers, young people, and so on. So it's going to be a very difficult situation to repair these bridges that have been burned over the years.
And Rihanna Matthews-Brown, as Dr. Spence alluded to, there was an incident in which at the University of Chicago, an armed officer shot a student in Georgia Tech in Atlanta. A student leader was shot and killed by campus police at Portland State University. That happened. If a tragedy like that were to occur on the Homewood campus or in East Baltimore near the hospital, who's liable? Who holds that officer accountable? If there's a lawsuit, as there often are, civil suits that come. But right now, the city of Baltimore pays off people who've been wronged by Baltimore police, personnel. Who handles that? You're already asking the state to subsidize an awful lot of this. You'll pay for the force itself, but as Antero alluded to, there are these extra things that the state is being asked to pay for. Why should the state be subsidizing this very rich private institution?
Really good question. I think first to clarify, when it comes to the additional components of the bill, those projects that are to promote community investment, Johns Hopkins would be required to contribute to a number of those different efforts. So one is the police athletic lead. That would have to be funded solely by Hopkins. There are a number of matching grants in the program. In order to qualify for the matching funds, Johns Hopkins, like any other qualifying anchor institution, for an example, would have to contribute money towards that.
Would the university be willing to have a police athletic league without the police force?
I believe so.
Isn't that just a good idea for the neighborhood?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that was the purpose in including that in there. To respond to kind of comments that we received during our engagement process, that it's not just about policing. There are a lot of other things that we need to do to start to rebuild that trust and invest in the community.
Let's go to the phones. We're not going to be able to take too many calls, but Garrett is calling from East Baltimore. You are, I guess, a medical student at Hopkins. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'm a medical student as well as I live in the East Baltimore Care neighborhood where I own a house there.
Well,
and then I'm on the Patterson Park Neighborhood Association board.
You testified in Annapolis. What's your quick comment? Thanks for calling.
Yeah. I mean, so my comment was really just kind of to bring up the kind of dispel the notion a little bit that the whole community and student population is really opposed to this. I think a lot of it is that the opponents of the bill are fairly loud in their opposition. And I think a lot of the people that are in favor of it just haven't really been engaged. Like, for example, on my block, I went and talked to every single person that lived there. We had almost near unanimous support for the bill, and we're a pretty representative block of East Baltimore. We're in the Care neighborhood adjacent to it. And then in the medical school, I was able to get 115 signatures out of classmates within 12 hours. And there just wasn't an opportunity for people to really voice their support of this. I think a lot of people are kind of quietly in favor of it.
All right. Well, thanks for that perspective. Let's go to Misha in Charles Village near the Homewood campus. Misha, welcome to Midday.
I live in Charles Village, which is a couple of blocks from the Homewood campus. We had an incident a couple of years ago where somebody was attacked on the street in front of our house. We called the cops. A Hopkins security officer came, and pretty much as soon as he found out that the person involved wasn't a Hopkins student, he kind of just ghosted. So are the Hopkins cops going to have that same attitude if they become an armed police force? Or are they actually going to be accountable when people in the community are hurt, whether they're Hopkins students or not?
All right. Thanks for that call.
You know, and that's a comment that we heard, you know, a concern that we heard frequently during our community engagement process. People wanted to make sure that our response would be uniform, that we would, if we were responsible for coming to someone's aid, that we didn't change our approach based on whether they were affiliated with the university. And the bill would require us to do just that. So if we have our primary patrol area in that area, we would be responsible for responding to calls. It does not matter, you know, whether someone is affiliated with the university or not. Those calls would be dispatched through BPD's 911 system. Any calls in our concurrent areas, so areas that are off campus, you know, assuming that we have an MOU with BPD and consent from the community, would then be, again, dispatched through that 911 system. If we are the closest officer and BPD assigns our officers to respond, they have an obligation to respond appropriately. And again, it's
and it could
no
be
difference.
5 blocks away, 10 blocks away, 30 blocks away. If somebody steals a car on the campus and drives quickly to a you know, a distant place, you're saying that there are scenarios in which a Hopkins police officer would be able to pursue that suspect.
And this is not a new model. We see it here with the other university police departments, that they have their areas of primary and concurrent jurisdiction, and they work that out with BPD. But we would be accountable to the community and the public to respond uniformly.
And Lester Spence, are there amendments? Are there assurances that you and others could get from the university in terms of racial profiling, in terms of accountability, in terms of training and recruitment that would satisfy you that this could be a workable solution or could be a workable endeavor?
That's a good question. And as an aside, I just note that there are people who, Garrett, who gave a shout out a second ago, there are people who support it, so I get that. For me, I can't imagine a circumstance in which I'd be gung-ho for it, but I can imagine being a little bit closer if, for example, the police weren't subject to the, weren't protected under the Law Enforcement Officers Bill of Rights. I'd be a little bit closer if, for example, there are real accountability mechanisms where a review board actually had the ability to discipline officers and that review board wasn't actually chosen by Hopkins or even the state legislature, but community associations. I'd be a little bit more likely to support it. But in general, I just think it's this is and I say this as an employee of Hopkins. I feel I have a warm relationship with a number of the people who from Hopkins who gave our resources to political officials. I think that this is an instance in which Hopkins is using its power as the largest private employer in the state of Maryland to create a force that takes more accountability away from citizens.
And Antero Pietilla, it's not unprecedented for private institutions to have their own armed security that are sworn officers, not unlike, you know, local police officers. But this distinction between a public agency and a private agency, is this crossing that barrier? Is that a slippery slope? Is that of concern, or should it be of concern to people who say, look, police, fire, those are kinds of things that should be strictly public concerns?
Well, so much of this depends on how this whole deal would end. We would need to have the memorandum of understanding, and it is unknown how that would shape up. And so many of these details of the deal, they are unknown, and that is another reason why lots of people are worrisome about the consequences of this.
Mm-hmm. On Facebook, Dave writes for Professor Spence, if there is a legitimate concern for the safety of Hopkins students, staff, and faculty, and a private police force isn't the answer, what is the solution to keeping folks safe on your campus?
Well, so first I'd actually, I think that's a great question. First I'd actually unpack that legitimate concern for Hopkins students, staff, and faculty. So I'm African-American. I gave a talk for another subject to a group of black male students at Hopkins, right? The first thing they asked me before I could even talk to them about what I was supposed to be talking to them about were their concerns about a police department, because they know that any conception of safety and security will put them on the wrong end. I play basketball 2-3 times a week. I'm actually missing my game right now for this. Basketball is pretty important to me. there's not a day where when a group of people are being given the Hopkins tour, where I don't catch one of the people giving the tour basically articulate a bubble suggesting that Hopkins is safe and outside is not. Right. You take those two pieces of data, this idea that there's this bubble around Hopkins, and then this data that black people, that black students in this case, don't feel safe. It's like that kind of sort of throws this whole idea of a single safety security project into question.
Yeah. And we just have a minute left, Rihanna Matthews Brown. This notion of a bubble. What, in your view, is the university's obligation to the city of Baltimore, not just to the campus that you all run, the campuses, the three of them? But is there an obligation to the city to reduce crime overall? And can you demonstrate that this privatization of law enforcement is going to help the city at large?
Right. I would say first, we absolutely have an obligation to Baltimore, and it extends beyond addressing concerns around, you know, safety and violent crime around our campus. You know, we have.
But how's it expressed in this bill?
Right. Well, in this bill, one approach could be, which we are not doing, is to establish a police department that just has boundaries around our campus and seeks to prevent people or just protect the people on campus. Our approach is actually to work with the communities to determine whether they think there would be a value to having our police officers in the community and then creating the accountability structures there. At the same time, the bill also has a number of investments that would directly impact the community. I think that any benefit of a Hopkins Police Department is both on campus and off campus.
Rihanna Matthews Brown is the Director of University Initiatives at Johns Hopkins. Dr. Lester Spence is a Professor of Political Science and Africana Studies at Hopkins. And Antero Piatila is a journalist and author. His latest book is called The Ghosts of Johns Hopkins. This is a difficult, complicated, emotional issue. I appreciate all of you coming in. It will not be the last time we have a conversation about it here on Midday.
I hope not.
Thank you all. Coming up next, we're switching gears to music. A flamenco virtuoso plays for us live in Studio A. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.